Relationships rule. That's my motto. I'm Janice Porter, and I love to share the power of relationship marketing to help grow and impact business. I've grown my business by building and nurturing relationships, and I'd like to help you do the same. Welcome to the Relationships Rule podcast, where connection means everything. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Relationships Rule. Today's guest, Sir Darren Jacklin, went from being labeled a throwaway kid with learning difficulties to sitting on the board of a multi-billion dollar global company and leading a $100 million philanthropic initiative. Along the way, he's trained executives from 157 Fortune 500 companies, mentored countless entrepreneurs, and helped build schools in some of the most underserved communities in the world. But what fueled that transformation wasn't just grit or strategy, it was relationships. And in this conversation, we talk about the people who saw him differently, the mentors who shaped his mindset, and how giving back has become his greatest driver of success. So if you've ever questioned the power of belief or the ripple effect of a well-timed relationship, then listen in. Welcome. Welcome to the show, Darren.
I'm grateful to be here, Janice. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to make a difference.
Well, it's so amazing because I think what's funny is how we reconnected through Bordy, right? It was through Bordy. And do you want to just give a blurb about what Bordy is? Because Bordy reached out to me, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Bordy Boardman is an artificial intelligence human connector. It's a superhuman connector. It's artificial intelligence. It's a computer program. Somebody designed it. I've been on it for a couple of years as one of the original people. It's free right now to use. And people just go to Bordy, B-O-A-R-D, Bordy.ai. They can do a little bit of research on that. And you can call Bordy or you can WhatsApp or you can email Bordy. And what it does is basically just fast tracks people. If they use LinkedIn or social media to network and professionally connect and collaborate, Bordy just expedites that thing with speed and execution to connect. And so it speaks to thousands of people around the world, from all over the world, from all walks of life every day, every 24 hours. And then Bordy collects all that data as artificial intelligence and then connects and matchmakes people. And so, I speak to Bordy almost on a daily basis, either by WhatsApp or by telephone. We've got a great AI relationship. So it's an artificial intelligence agent to look
yes.
at. And somebody who's like your side person. And so the first couple of times you do it, it's kind of awkward and weird until you kind of build that relationship that you're talking to AI. And then after a while, it gets to know you and to build that relationship with you. Then it seems like kind of your best friend or your best buddy that's a confidant to you.
Sort of like ChatGPT does for me, but this is more of a networking guru for me. And it is so interesting. And so when you came up in my LinkedIn messaging, I went, I know this person. I think I knew this person a long time ago. So I was curious to reconnect, and that's how it happened. And I just thought it was great. And I'm so glad that we did. So let's start with a little snapshot, because you wrote this book, which I did just read, Until I Become.
Oh,
yeah, I pretty much read everything except the last chapter, I'm being honest, because I didn't get quite finished. But a snapshot for those who don't know your story of the headline version of how you went from struggle to service, success and service, I would say.
You know, I think a lot of it comes from my mother. I'll give my mother credit. My mom worked in, palliative care and hospice in a senior care facility for many years in Swift Current, Saskatchewan, Canada. My mom's still alive. She's 77 years of age. And I learned a lot from role modeling and mentoring my mom. My mom was always about community service and making a difference in a city of less than 20,000 people. And, when I failed grade one of public school and I was misdiagnosed with a learning disability and a reading disability, it really affected my self-confidence. And I felt that I didn't fit in terms of, we call it community today, but I was in a classroom in a public school where, I was unfit based on the school system to be in regular public school.
Wait, because they misdiagnosed you? What do you mean?
Correct. So what they did is I was very hyperactive as a kid, and I didn't want to sit still in a school chair. I want to be out there. I'm a very action-oriented person. I'm also a very visual learner. I see things visually. And so school is primarily auditory learning. And so because I failed grade one, my parents were brought into class one day and sat down with a school teacher and a guidance counselor and said, based on, Darren failing grade one, we're not too sure what to do with him. So let's put him into special education.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So at age seven, I created my first business called Rent a Kid. And I would go out and knock on doors and cut grass, shovel snow in the wintertime, deliver newspapers. And a lady across the street, Pat Smith, She became the deputy premier of Saskatchewan next to our premier Grant Devine back in the 1980s. If anybody from the prairies don't know those names. And she became my first paying client at age 7. Now, her husband, Ed Smith, he was in a wheelchair. He had a work-related accident. They owned a company called Sam's General Trucking all across Western Canada, and they worked in the oil services field industry. So Pat Smith became my first paying client. So right through from 7, 8, 9, all the way up to my junior high and high school, I did work with them. And so I would just realize that if I wanted to earn more money, I would just go serve people and solve a problem in my community. Because we don't have money problems in life, we have thinking problems in life. There's no lack of money. It's a lack of thinking and taking action and then serving people and solving their problems. So every morning when I'd walk to school, Janice, I had a little notepad and I would look at, oh, that person has a dog. That person needs their grass cut. That person needs their windows washed. That person needs their leaves raked. That person has a hot tub in their backyard or a swimming pool. And I would always keep notes, handwrite notes every day. In fact, I still do it to this
I
day.
know you do.
I have a notepad right over here. And what I do is I'm very visually observant to seeing opportunity zones. So when people are in crisis or they're complaining, like if I can go onto social media or I can go onto a mainstream news broadcast of what everybody's complaining, I'm looking at what are the opportunities that people are complaining about and how can I monetize this and turn this into an income producing asset. And it's not, I'm not motivated by money. What motivates me is serving people and solving problems and making a difference. That's what, yeah.
School, during school, you probably hated school
Oh, it
then.
was so boring to me. I was, we call it daydreaming. I was dream building. I was visualizing my future of how I go out and serve people and solve problems and make more of a difference in the world and create a ripple of impact. And so I was thinking about, I got to go to that hotel or I've got to follow up with that person and I got to talk to that decision maker. And I was doing all these things all the time. And I always got into trouble by my teachers because, I was a collaborator. I'm all about collaboration, building teams and winning together. And in school, they call that cheating. To me, it's collaboration.
Love it. I love it. So it's fascinating because a lot of, well, you mentioned ADHD. I have a little granddaughter who is hyperactive. She has been diagnosed with that. She is so smart, but she just started grade one, and the teacher has said to my daughter already, your daughter's very smart. She's very quick and very intelligent. She finishes her work and then she gets into trouble because she's got too much time left on her hand, right? Well, then you've got to feed that somehow, right?
Become an entrepreneur, give her a project to work on,
Exactly.
right? Like when I was a kid in school, so for example, ADHD, I call it attention developed to a higher dimension,
Oh, I love it.
right? Attention developed. What I did is, so we used to have Jump Rope for Heart, like the Heart Foundation of
I
Canada.
used to teach school. I remember
Oh,
that
you
because you
did?
had that.
So we used to have a catalog in our elementary school about if we did certain, we did, skipping Jump Rope for Heart, we could raise money. So I used to go knock on doors. I actually raised more money by myself than all the school students of a few hundred students combined. And I actually won our school. I won all the top prizes and we were number one in Saskatchewan, Canada, our elementary school, and a semi tractor trailer. No exaggeration, right? No exaggeration. We had a semi tractor trailer pull up at my house and the school with all the prizes that I won. It was unbelievable. My family still talks about to this day that semi
Okay,
tractor trailer pulling
so
up.
wait a second. So, but you weren't motivated by money?
No, what it was is that money was a tool to me. What it was for me is I was never good enough, right? Full time. I felt I was never good enough. I was never going to amount to much. I was clumsy in sports in school. I was a kid to always pick last on any phys ed teach, phys ed team in school sports. I was a D student. I was labeled most likely not to ever succeed. I was a kid you'd write off and just like, oh, that kid's going nowhere fast, right? And I was that kid. But I was outside of school. There was a different me. There was this hustler, this kid who was fearless, this kid. But the thing is, because I was never good enough and I felt that it didn't matter and I wasn't a smart kid, what
But
happened
you
was,
were.
the thing was that I didn't fit into that school system box, right? Just like in business, we call it asset classes. I didn't fit into that school public system. But where I was outside was I realized at a very young age that as human beings, all we are is a network of conversations.
Okay,
We're,
stop
right?
there. This is perfect. Okay. So this you tell a story in here about every place you go is an opportunity to
Absolutely.
talk to people. And I totally agree with you. And I'll give you a quick story just to show you
Sure.
why I agree with you. My husband golfs, and he was golfing one day a couple of years ago with a friend, and then there was another couple that was brought to golf with them, right? That they didn't know. So he comes home and he says, "We golfed with this really nice couple. They were from Australia." And I said, "Oh, great. Where in Australia? How many kids did they have? What were they here for?" I'm asking all these. He said, "I don't know, Janice. I was just golfing with them," right? It's not a natural thing for some people. This was what I'm reading from your book. Many people go to hot tubs to relax, but I see hot tubs as an opportunity zone. Those who know me best have said there isn't a time when Darren doesn't talk. He never doesn't talk. I believe that. I've experienced it. I know it. Others jokingly say they get exhausted just by watching me do my thing, yet I thrive from it. Now that I've conquered my insecurities and fears, collaboration isn't work, it's play. Simple as it is, it feels good to be good at what I do. I think one of the big reasons people are willing to talk and collaborate with me is because I don't have a hidden agenda. I'm curious, I ask questions, and genuinely want to know more. My intentions are rooted in the same curiosity I've had since I was a child.
Absolutely.
And it goes on a little bit further, but you say you're fortunate to have experienced many of the hardships that you went through, as tough as it was for you to mature and evolve. You're grateful for the life
Absolutely.
that's unfolded. And I just think that's the essence of you and in this book. And, that says a lot.
Thank you. You know, to me, I learned that authenticity and vulnerability, because you see, I'll give you an example. When I grew up, I had no integrity, just to be fully transparent with you. And then I had selective integrity. Because I had to hit an agenda when I was younger, because it was always what's in it for me, what can I get? Because I felt I was never good enough. I always never had approval or recognition or validation from other people externally, especially from the school system growing up and stuff. So I would exaggerate things, I would embellish things, I would lie about things until I got a little bit older. And I was raising money one time for a startup company, and I was flat broke financially. I borrowed money, and I was flying to this other city to raise money with accredited investors and high net worth, ultra high net worth investors. And I was staying at this Holiday Inn hotel because they had free continental breakfast the next morning. Next morning when I woke up, I had no money. And so before Uber, we had taxi cabs and public transit. Well, I didn't have the money to go to this gentleman's office to meet with him. And so what I did was I lied. And so I called him from the hotel room phone and I said, listen, it's rush hour traffic. It's really busy. This is before, technology with GPS and all that stuff. We're using paper maps. I said, listen, it's very confusing for me. I'm not used to a big city like this. I'm living in Vernon, British Columbia, Canada, 60,000 people in population at the time. And I said, could you come to the hotel? And I just made up this exaggerated story, totally lie. And he comes to the hotel and he's not happy, this high net worth investor. And I sneak him into the hotel. There's signs everywhere for registered hotel guests only. And when he sits down, I go into pitching and selling like a timeshare salesperson, like aggressively. Because I realize if this guy's going to leave in 30 minutes, and I better get a check because I need $50,000 from this startup company, because we're going to be busting out of business in a couple of weeks. We got no money. And I go into this aggressive sales pitch to this guy. And in about 30 seconds, he looks at me and goes, Darren, shut up. He goes, let's just deal with your out of integrities. I'm like, what? What do you mean out of integrities? He goes, you have a lot of blind spots in your life, a lot of out of integrities. I'm like, well, what are you talking about? Blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean? And he goes, first of all, let's deal with when you called me. The reason why you called me is you're probably flat broke financially. Are you? Yes or no? And of course, I lie. No, I'm not.
Oh
Ego.
gosh,
And he says, so why did I have to come to you when you agreed to come to me? Why couldn't you just take a taxi? Why couldn't you take public transit? Right? I made up some BS story, right? So then he says, listen, you told me you were going to buy me breakfast this morning if I came to the hotel. There's registered signs all over this hotel. It says for registered hotel guests only. I'm not a hotel guest. He goes, listen, I'm going to give you some advice. Otherwise, I'm going to walk out the door. You'll never see me again. He goes, first thing is he said, stop pitching and selling successful people. You repel them. He said, rather than pitch and sell, start to educate and inform by listening and asking questions. Stop talking. He goes, take Dale Carnegie, take Toastmasters, which I end up doing. And he goes, the next thing I want you to do is you need to confront yourself on how much you exaggerate, you embellish, and you lie about things because you're a master at it. And he says, because you don't have any self-worth. You don't believe in yourself. So you have to exaggerate things. And he says, you know the reason why you exaggerate things, you embellish things, you lie about things? Because you don't have to confront yourself. And he says, the most suspicious and mistrusting people in society are people who have a lot of broken promises and are with themselves. They break their promises by things they're going to say they're going to do throughout the day, like do their laundry, do chores. They break their personal promises with themselves. and they break verbal or written agreements with other people. And he said, until you can confront yourself, you're never going to get ahead. You're going to live in this vicious cycle in your life. And he says, I'm not going to invest today, but I hope you got $50,000 worth of mentor advice. I need to go now. And he left. And that day, Janice changed my life.
I was going to say that was obviously your first mentor
Yeah. Because I
without
had a
knowing
blind
it.
spot of lying and exaggerating and embellishing myself. I wasn't authentic. I wasn't vulnerable. I was just hustling and grinding, trying to get whatever I could to coming out of fear and doubt and worry and insecurity and f tremendous amount of fear and negative self-talk in my head. And what I did was a few years later, I actually hired, and I've hired three now, integrity coaches, where they actually audit my life personally and professionally. It's the most uncomfortable. I'd rather stand in a bonfire. It's just so confronting, but so freeing, because the blind spot was I never realized how much until age 38. I'm 53 now, but it was a transformation in my life, because what happened was the payoff was I never had to confront myself. Now integrity is everything for me, because without integrity, nothing works. And so what I do now is I focus on three key things. Number one is be my word, and I'm very intentional with it. Like I set alarms, I have structures. I'm very mindful of what I give my word to. I'm very mindful of my reputation, and I'm very mindful of my credibility. So my word, my reputation, and credibility. Because I can be flat broke, be anywhere in the world, but if I got my integrity, my word, credibility, and reputation, I can move forward in my life. And I see workability with people today. Because if you look back, is all people who are in courts and legal systems all the time comes down to broken promises and broken agreements. Just like divorces, business breakups, all these things, split ups. And if you retrace the steps and do a deep dive of a due diligence, you'll realize broken promises and broken agreements and people not keeping their word or exaggerating or embellishing things. And it's fascinating because that's the way I used to be.
And I love that you know that and that you rose above it, because I remember when I met you the first time, and I think it was probably in around the mid to late 2000s, the
Yes.
aughts or whatever they
Yeah,
call
probably
them.
20 years ago. Yeah.
And one thing that you said at the time, I remember you were all about networking and getting people together, and you were very proud. And this may be before the time that that you had found yourself, so to speak. I
Yeah.
don't know, but I remember that you always talked about your phone and the contacts in your phone and
Yes.
how many contacts you had in your phone. You were very proud of that. But was that built on the right stuff, or
On the
was
right
that
stuff, yes, because what
okay?
happened was I had to do a whole cleanse once I started hiring integrity coaches and getting around these masterminds of people hold me to accountable and responsible for my word and my integrity. What happened was I realized I had to do a cleanse of a friend inventory, as they call it. And you have to do like an inventory in business, you do a friend inventory. And I had to, because if you hang out with four financially broke people, you become the fifth. And in my 30s, I had an R9 credit rating. And most people have no idea, they've never heard of an R9 credit rating. But anybody who ever works with Equifax or credit union or in the financial service industry or banking industry, you'll know what an R9 credit rating, which is the worst possible case
Not
scenario.
good. I knew that.
It's worse than bankruptcy,
Oh
okay?
gosh.
And I went to R9 and I turned that around to becoming a multimillionaire. And I'm not saying it to brag, but I was so out of integrity and with everything. And I turned that around over a 7 year period, took 7 years. I was so financially broke, Janice, that I went in to file personal bankruptcy and I couldn't afford the application fees. So I couldn't pay to go back. So people always ask me, did you ever go bankrupt? I said, I couldn't afford it.
I
True
love it.
story,
I love
because
it.
I couldn't afford it. But the whole thing was, is that when people look at their finances, their relationship, they're like, well, why aren't I getting ahead? You got to confront yourself and look at who you are as a human being. And it's ugly. It's uncomfortable. But that's where growth happens. That's where the
Okay,
breakthroughs happen.
so you didn't do that by yourself.
No, I started taking, so I was in Dale Carnegie training, Toastmasters. I started to take different workshops, training, develop programs. And I started to get around people who were straight with me, who weren't there to be my friend. They were there to be just straight with me and call it the way it is. And that's the key thing, is that you don't join an easy crowd because you won't grow. I got around people like for this morning. I went hiking this morning at 4 o'clock this morning. I went
I
with a
know.
guy that most people would not want to hang around. This guy makes you squirm. Like, this guy's a black and white. He's a no BS kind of guy. He's Canadian, but you think he's a New Yorker. And he's somebody who his gift to the world is seeing where your BS is.
Okay.
Senior BS. He's got a high BS stuff. And I love him because he loves being around me because he always sees things that most people won't point out and say, but he shares things with me. And I've come a long ways. I've known him for many years, but most people don't want to be around the guy like this because he just calls you out on things, you know,
Yeah.
in private, in confidential,
Yeah.
but it's uncomfortable. But when you step back and you think, wow, okay, yeah, absolutely blind spot. Yeah, I that's a growth opportunity for me. But
I
most
love
people don't
it.
want that. They want to be sold the rah-rah, the fluff, make me feel
Yeah.
good versus saying, hey, where can I improve? How can I level up in scope and become better?
So I'm curious, with the people that you have trained over the years in corporate training, multiple companies, have you seen yourself in those students, your
Absolutely.
former self, and how, what have you done, and if any?
So a big thing is when you watch people's feet, not their lips. Okay. So we hear in business that talk is cheap. What I learned a lot from corporate training, I trained over 1 million people in
Yeah.
over 25 years in 50 countries, is that we hear that talk is cheap, but most people cheapen their talk because their words have no power. And I saw this a lot in corporate America and corporate Canada, corporations around the world is, you know, people go, they get great academics and they got degrees and diplomas and they talk a really good game, but the execution of following through consistently is different. And what you do is, so what I learned years ago from a billionaire friend of mine, he said, Darren, give people micro commitments. So one of my mistakes I made early on in my years is I would meet people and I'd marry them before I'd date them,
Yeah.
right? And I just like, let's be business partners or let's joint venture, let's do things like that.
Yeah.
And what I do now is I take my time to go through the discovery process and then due diligence process. And what I realize is you want, so one of the things I do today is a vetting system is I take people hiking. And I'll tell you the reason
Yes.
why.
Yes, you
You can
said that. It's
play
fascinating.
pickleball, you can go golf, you
Yeah.
can do tennis. See, here's the thing. I'll share with you the psychology. If you and I go hiking, as soon as we leave the parking lot of the hiking trail,
Yeah.
in the back of your mind, now this is unspoken communication, so you may not verbally say it out loud, but it's unspoken communication.
Yeah.
In the back of your mind, you're thinking, oh my gosh, what happens if we get attacked or eaten by a wild animal? Like this morning, I had an encounter with a black bear. Pitch darkness this morning, hiking on the trail,
Yeah.
and 3 feet from me was a black bear.
God.
Full encounter with a black bear this morning, just a few hours ago this
Yeah.
morning, and he didn't do anything. He was just checking me out, check him out, and we just carried on. He went off the trail, I'm off the trail. And so first thing is when you leave the trail, in the back of your mind, you're thinking, oh my gosh, you're gonna get attacked or eaten by a wild animal. Then is if I get hurt or injured, can this person or the people I'm with in this hiking group, can they call 911 or call for search and rescue or first responders? So what happens is the social mask comes off because if you're not authentic with me,
Yeah.
I'm not going to save your life.
Right.
So you've got to be authentic. You've got to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
And as we're hiking, what happens is you realize the further we get away from your automobile and the parking lot
Yeah.
is now you're out in the wilderness.
And all you
Now you're,
have is each other.
it's a different environment, right? Yeah. And you've got no safety devices. So you've got to be your true, authentic, vulnerable self. And so the key thing is most human beings, they want to look good. That's why you see a lot of image and ego in golf and pickleball and tennis. People
Yeah.
want to look good and they don't want to look bad. Now, when you're hiking, you may have to fart, you may have to burp, you're going to be sweating, you're going to be stinky, we're going to be elevating, you're going to try and catch a, like when I take people up the Grouse Grind in North Vancouver, they can't
I know
lie
it
to me.
well. No.
Can't lie to you when you go up the Grouse Grind in North Vancouver, BC. You're trying to catch your breath.
Totally.
You
Yeah.
can't exaggerate things, you can't embellish things. So it's
Yeah.
a great place to do an interview for people,
Yeah.
or you know, it's great because you can really do discovery and due diligence. Here's the reason why, Janice. Behavior never lies. I'll give you an example. You watch how when people show up, I always give them you know, the All Trails app to the website for hiking. I say, hey, bring a water bottle. Bring proper footwear. Bring, if you have a whistle, bring a whistle. Bring a backpack. You'd be amazed how many times people show up. They have none of the 10 essentials. And they just, you know, I had a guy the other day came, wanted to work, do some business with me, showed up with, we did a 4 hour hike, not even a water bottle, not even a
Oh my
backpack.
God.
When I got talking to him, I said, I'm just curious. So are you in a relationship? Are you married, single, divorced, separated, common law? He goes, no, I'm married. I said, oh yeah. Do you have any family or children? He goes, yeah, 2 young kids. I said, oh yeah. I said, can I ask you a question? So we started in the dark hiking at 6 a.m. Does your wife know where we are? He goes, no, she thinks I'm at the gym and then going to work. I said, let's say worst case scenario, something unexpectedly happened to you. How would your wife get a hold of me? She goes, well, I have no idea. I said, is it in your calendar? Did you leave a note? He goes, no, none of that stuff. Behavior never lies. So something happened to this guy unexpectedly. I don't know how to contact his wife. I only have his cell phone number and his email address. His wife doesn't know who I am, doesn't know the hiking location of where we are, no GPS, no hiking trail, nothing. And this guy tells me he's a great leader. But it shows
Interesting.
me that he's not a great communicator and a great planner.
Right, exactly. Very interesting. So right now you spend a lot of time hiking, and you're working on a new venture, right? A
Yeah,
new
we're doing a
business.
roll-up right now in the bookkeeping, accounting, and tax planning industry across North America. So the big problem we're solving for right now is an aging population of men and women, baby boomers. And the average CPA, chartered professional accountant right now in the United States of America and Canada is 63 years of age. Just look at your accountant. How old is your average accountant? And so these men and women, no different than the veterinary industry, the dentistry industry, the chiropractic industry, the medical industry, they're aging as baby boomers. And a lot of their children today want to get into cryptocurrency or artificial intelligence or cybersecurity or other different industries. So we're not seeing generational or legacy businesses. So we go in and we acquire the book of business, we acquire the employees, and we also acquire the real estate holdings if they have real estate assets as well. And then we roll them up into Smashing Numbers, our parent company. And we're building this to a 50 million in annual recurring revenue through the acquisitions. Because here's the key thing. People always ask, they go, why are you doing these acquisitions? It's easier to acquire revenue than to actually go out and create revenue. And there's more risks with the startup in the first 3 to 5 years. There's a lot more risks in a startup phase. So we don't really buy an existing company that's been around for decades, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years. It's got a history and experience and a proven track record. It's got financial statements. And we can put that into a data room as part of our discovery and due diligence. So when you want to raise, like, it's great for. It's a boring industry. It's heavily regulated. It's a compliant industry. But the cool thing is it's predictable revenue in the bookkeeping, accounting, tax planning. So it doesn't matter if there's a natural disaster. It doesn't matter who's in political power. You've got to pay your taxes. Two things you can't avoid is death and taxes. So we're building this to 50 million in revenue over the next few years. We'll scale it. And then I want to do a nine-figure exit. And then with the nine-figure exit, my financial proceeds, I'm going to contribute $100 million to then build 1,000 schools around the world through Link Foundation to help alleviate poverty, provide access to clean drinking water, food security, and education while enriching children's lives around the world. So
And
that's
you've
my
already built some
contributions.
schools
We have.
in whereabouts again in Africa?
So our first pilot school, we started in Liberia, West Africa, one of the most impoverished countries on the planet, according to the United Nations. I think it's in the top five most impoverished countries. Our second school was in Honduras, Central America. And now our Link Foundation team's proactively collaborating right now on multiple other schools. When I got knighted back in 2022 through the Royal Order of Cappadocia from Spain, the Royal Family of Spain, I took on the accountability and responsibility of 100 schools through Link Foundation. And now that we've had some great success with this roll-up strategy with Smashing Numbers, and we're making huge gains and momentum, and we're getting lots of speed and traction, I realized that, you know what? I need to play a bigger game in my life. Because I've been challenged by my inner circle saying, Darren, you're not playing a big enough game in life to really do a passion project to really serve humanity. I'm like, okay, so what's the gap? And they go, the gap is you can easily do 100 schools. That's done. You'll make that happen. You'll get that done. But you need to stretch yourself to do 1,000 schools with your team. Now that's a stretch goal for you. So I'm like, and yeah, that gets me uncomfortable. Yeah, that gets me uncomfortable to do 1,000 schools over the next, 10 plus years with a high performance team of men and women. And but I know we can do it. We've got a great high performance team. We've got accountability, responsibility, transparency, discipline, and high integrity, which I love. And we've got a lot of workability. So, and we have a lot of people starting to watch and observe what we're doing. But also, we have a lot of people who want to financially contribute. We have people who want to volunteer. We want people who come on humanitarian trips down the road. So we're really starting to build this ecosystem through Link Foundation to really serve humanity and create that ripple of impact. And people always say, what is Link Foundation? Link Foundation is we build schools.
Okay, fair enough. So I remember, who was it? Somebody, I forget who it was I was talking to about this, but okay. Some people say third world countries, they need that, and it's wonderful that you're doing that. But there is poverty at home as well.
Yes. Yeah.
So, yeah, go ahead.
Good question. So, I've tried to do stuff here in Vancouver, and
Really?
I've been threatened to have my windows smashed, my tires slashed, because what happens is when you're in the first world, so if you look at business models and government structures, when you take people, I used to be on welfare. I was on welfare for a few months years ago, and 30 years ago. And what happens is when you're on welfare, you create jobs. People have to keep statistics on you. They have to meet with you. You have to fill out application forms. They have to vet you. There's all that stuff. It creates an ecosystem. It creates jobs, right? So what happened is when you start to change the numbers of people that are homeless, like in North America, you threaten people's jobs and you threaten consultants' livelihoods and income. And
Yeah.
I've actually brought a number of years ago, I brought together a team of people one time in a mastermind who had like-mindedness, who wanted to actually deal with the downtown east side of Vancouver,
Yeah.
Canada.
Yeah.
And we were threatened, verbally threatened by people that if you come into this territory, we want these people on the streets homeless because it's a business for us.
That's scary, isn't it? But I
Right?
totally hear what you're saying.
It's
Yeah.
a, look at the business model, right? And so the
Yeah.
thing is that when we go to these third, so the thing is today, we're globalization. We're in a global village today, and with technology and the way the world is today, we're globalized. If you look at from a population basis, North America, Europe has an aging population of men and women called baby boomers. If we go to India and we go to the continent of Africa and you walk around East or West Africa and you look at, like, I was just not too long ago in Tanzania, East Africa, I was in Kenya, I was in Uganda, East Africa, you'll see tremendous amount of youth. Young men and women thriving. So there's a balance of, the law of duality of older population here, younger population there. If the African continent can get it right and mitigate the amount of corruption and have honesty and transparency, in the next 20 years, they could be a dominant continent on the planet because there's so many young people there that could be youth and they're hungry. I speak to a lot of people in Africa. I'm in frequent communication through Zoom and through WhatsApp and through social media. And these young men who are hungry, and I have a lot that follow me on social media, they don't like their elected officials because they find it's too corruption and they're
Well,
pushing
they're
people
learning the
down.
wrong things. They're learning the corruption and so on. And
Yeah.
yeah. Well, yeah,
And
so.
they need positive people to show. So I like to teach them about integrity, but the way I teach them about is integrity is experientially. So that's why I love hiking so much because to me, hiking's a classroom. Like tonight, I'm taking a group of people tonight, night hiking. And these are people who are scared of the dark. And what I share with people is I said, do you want to develop your critical thinking skills? Do you want to have more mental toughness? Do you want to change your mindset? Do you want to focus more on, going in and just mitigating the amount of negative self-talk or mind chatter? Be like, well, how do you do that? Do I go to a temple? Do I do yoga? Do I sit in a corner and meditate? I'm like, no, you're going to come out hiking with me. I said, well, what the heck does hiking have to do with calming my negative self-talk and my mind chatter and building my belief? What does that have to do with it? I said, come night hiking with me. What do you mean nighttime hiking? Because as soon as you come on the night, because I got people today, like right now, they're terrified of going out tonight. Because what
Are
happens is
these
when you.
people you know or you've just met through different things?
So I have a very large hiking group here in Vancouver,
Yeah.
Canada,
Yeah.
but I have friends bring out friends.
Okay.
And so we always end up with more people because
Got
I
it.
create a real safe container for people to be safe.
Yeah.
But what it is it's the briefing and the debriefing and the life lessons that people unpack through a collaborative experience when they come out hiking. So there's times we talk, times we don't talk.
Yeah.
So one of the things I do when I take people out hiking sometimes, and you might see this on my social media, is I get people to take a rock at the bottom of the mountain. And I say to myself, okay, we all have things in our lives that we're carrying that feel heavy at times. It could be about a breakup in a relationship, it could be financial stress, it could be a death of a child or a family member or a loved one that we're grieving about. It could be things that we got to make decisions in our job or career or business or aging parents, whatever it is. We all carry the weight of things sometimes, personally or professionally. So here's what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to take this rock. If you'd like to, you can choose to, you can say no. I want you to carry this rock, and for the next half hour, we're gonna climb this mountain. And when we get to the top, I'll show you what we're gonna do next step. And so people are carrying this rock. And sometimes if they talk a lot or they get distracted, that's okay, great. I want you to take some water and I want you to take a gulp of water and you're gonna have the water in your cheeks so your mouth is full. You cannot spit the water out until we get to the top. You have to breathe through your nose and have the same amount of water because we can measure if you want to get really specific at the top of the mountain. And you're gonna carry the rock for the next 30 minutes. Be like, you mean I can't open my mouth? Yeah, you gotta breathe through your nose. And you're gonna climb the mountain. You're gonna sweat. Your heart rate's gonna go up. And we're gonna get to the top of the mountain. I'll show you what the new next step. And people are like, you gotta be absolutely crazy. I tell you, when we get to the top, you'd be amazed, Janice. The majority of the men and women from all walks of life start crying. They have such a profound breakthrough experience because it's practical. It's on the court. It's really because they experience it in their physical bodies. It's not an intellectual thing. They're not reading out of a book or studying on or watching a YouTube video. They're actually experiencing their life on the court. And they get to the top, and that rock feels like it's 50, 60 pounds, even though
Sure.
it could be a pound or two. And they get to the top, and they're like, and okay, you spit the water out. They spit the water out. I'm like, oh, what'd you learn? My gosh, my breathing. I'm like, let's have a conversation. Tell me about that. Wow, I'm so present. Wow, Darren, do you hear the squirrels? Do you hear the birds? Oh my gosh. Wow, do I ever look at all the colors of the green? Everything changed for them because they're in, because most people are walking around, but they're not present,
Right.
right? They're
That's the
disconnected.
focus. They had to
They're not
focus.
grounded.
Yeah.
And so they get grounded, they get to the top, and I'm like, what do you want to do with the rock? Let's put the rock on this rock pile. They're like, wow. And they said, this is what I'm dealing with. And some people yell, some people scream. Some people hug me. I had a group just a couple weeks ago. The whole group broke down emotionally. It was great because we had a psychologist in the room and we had a brain scientist in the group, in the hiking group. It was just fascinating. And the one lady comes to me after and she goes, Darren, listen, I have a PhD. I said, no, I know you have a PhD. And she goes, Darren, I've never seen like this. This is like a case study to me. She goes, this is fascinating to see human behavior like this. I've never seen people. She goes, I just dear, when you ask people to pick up the rock and then take some water and fill up their cheeks with water, she goes, you should see people like what they're saying, like go screw, go pound sand. And you know, just the mind, like people are thinking in their mind, like, are you absolutely crazy? And people just, and then she goes, when they're going up, she goes, you could just see the mind chatter. Like if you could just caption the words. Like people are yelling at you in their head, they're screaming at you, like, who are you? Why did I sign up for this hike? This is ridiculous, this is stupid. Because people want to look good and they don't want to look bad. But when they get
Right.
to the top, they have a phenomenal breakthrough. And then the next couple hours they enjoy an incredible, beautiful hike. And people today write me letters, they send me cards, they send me emails, text messages saying that hike was a life-changing experience for me.
How long have you been doing these?
For 5 years now.
And have they evolved as well?
Yeah, because I watch and observe people all the time, human
Yeah.
behavior,
Yeah.
and you get a chance to see things as people evolve and also different cultures as well,
Yeah.
right? Different cultures do things differently and
Yeah.
different from different walks of life. And it's fascinating. Sometimes you'll have mothers who just do everything for their children and put themselves last,
Of
right?
course.
And when they come out hiking with me and they go up top and they realize that I do everything for everybody else and put myself
Right.
last, at the end of the day, there's no energy or time for me. And then
So
the, So I
this
have
is,
them hug a tree. I
yeah.
have I the other day I had two women who wouldn't stop talking. So I said, ladies, I'm gonna separate you. We're gonna take 5 minutes. I'm gonna time you, I'm gonna come back in 5 minutes. No talking, you're gonna each hug a tree. And the one was like, come on, Darren, listen, I don't have time for this kumbaya stuff. This is a bunch, I don't have time for this kumbaya stuff. Like I'm not gonna drink the Kool-Aid on this. I said, okay,
Right.
whatever. I just want you to hug a tree. You can feel the energy of a tree. She goes, Darren, come on, let's be realistic. Like this is a bunch of BS. And I'm like, okay,
Yeah.
that's are you just open to being coachable? I said, you wanted to meet me, you wanted to have some breakthroughs in your life. Are you coachable? Yes or no? She says, I am. Okay, good. Then trust the process.
My
Right?
God.
Because I'm not gonna argue for your limitations.
Yeah.
And
So
so she hugged the tree and she broke down crying. At the end of 5 minutes, she goes, wow. I said, what do you feel? And she goes, you know what her word was at the end of the hike? Because I asked everybody to give me one word. And her one word was oneness. She said, I've never felt oneness. I had a gentleman the other day. He said, Darren, for the first time ever in my life, I feel aliveness. I had another woman says, I feel joy. I feel invigorating.
This is your gift, right? This is your
Yeah.
gift.
And people, we're on a hiking trail, right? And people like, and the one guy's like, Darren, I've never said the word aliveness in my life. I've never even thought of that word before. It's not my vocabulary, but that word just came to mind when you said, what's the one word? And the one woman, oneness, joy, fulfillment, self-expression, being seen. I had a woman the other day. She's out with me. She goes, Darren, I feel the first time in my life I've ever been seen. Been seen.
That's scary. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Powerful.
So, can you name for me two mentors in your life that made such a profound
Yeah.
difference to you?
Jim Rowan, the first one.
The best.
Yeah. Jim Rowan. Bob Proctor.
Yeah. I met him too. Yeah.
Louise Hayes. Dr. Wayne Dyer.
Okay, all the good ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dr. John DeMartini. I've traveled the world with Dr.
Yes,
John
I
DeMartini.
understand you're very fond of him, right?
Yeah.
Is he from here?
Houston, Texas.
That's right. Okay. All good ones. Yeah, I think Jim Rohn has to be one of my favorites for sure.
His girl guide story, when he talks about the girl guides coming to his house one day and knock on the door to sell Girl Scout cookies. And he politely said to the Girl Scout, he says, "Oh, I'm sorry, we have a whole bunch of cookies in the cupboard, so we're fine." And the little Girl Scout leaves and he closes the door and he says, "I lied to a Girl Scout. We don't have cookies in the house. I don't have $2. I'm an outlaw, I'm flat broke." He goes, "That was the day that changed my life when I realized I had to become accountable and responsible because I couldn't afford $2 to buy the Girl Scout cookies. And I lied to her." If you
Interesting.
go to YouTube and type in Jim Rowan
Yeah.
Girl Guide Story
Yeah.
on
Yeah.
YouTube,
Yeah, I don't know
the
that
clip will
one.
come up. It's I cry every time I watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, I've listened to some of his network marketing
Of course.
over and over and over again. Yeah, I
Of
know.
course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I love it.
That's one of the things he says. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a picture of Jim Rohn and I in Kelowna, British Columbia, Canada. I was on welfare. I had a lady bought my tickets. I had no money. And she loaded me up into her van. She was a social worker and she had a foster care home. She's passed away now. And this is many years ago. And she actually took me to a Jim Rohn seminar. And I got a chance to meet Jim Rohn and I'm there. And you could just see, like, I've got this picture. And here I am with Jim Rohn, a guy who's on welfare. And I then met Jim multiple other times before he passed away.
Yeah.
And he had a profound difference in my life.
Oh,
Still listen to his audio cassette tapes and CDs
yeah. Yeah.
and books and videos on YouTube all the time.
Amazing. Well, Darren, this has been delightful. And I
Yeah.
know that we could talk for a long time. You've got so many stories and I'm fascinated by, but I think if all comes back down for me to being curious, being able to read people,
Yes.
and being able to I think to see the world through relationships, because in the end, that's all we have, are each other, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's what I think really speaks to me the most about the work that you're doing in so many different ways. And yet you're so excited about you're so passionate about smashing numbers as you are about building the schools
Yeah.
It's been a delight. I
I'm
appreciate
grateful for your
talking to
thoughts.
you. I feel like I have to have you come back because I want to ask you so many more questions. But last one, last
Yes.
question. What's your best piece of advice to people listening today who are working for themselves, who might be have limited beliefs, who might want to get, more out of life and have that aha moment that you had so many years ago?
So one of the key things to consider, because I like to give people an exercise,
Yeah.
is I want people to write this down. Where am I not requesting in my life? So for every question that we don't ask, the answer is always no.
Yeah.
And what I always train to develop people on is making requests. Okay? Because for most people, they don't want to ask,
That's
right?
true.
Could be pride, could be shame. You know, I'm better than asking, I'm above this. So the key thing is if you're ever around me, you'll see that I'm always making requests. Sometimes they're outrageous requests, sometimes they're powerful requests, sometimes they're unreasonable requests. But I'm always making requests. So I want people to look at where am I not requesting in my life? Because people play a really small game in life. And the reason why is they're not allowing other people to be a contribution to their life. Think about that.
Beautiful.
Most people are not allowing other people. See, strangers have everything we want, everything we need, and everything we desire in our lives. But we're taught as children, don't talk to strangers. But strangers have everything we want. And so the key thing is where am I not requesting my life? So whatever area of your life, I'll give people a hint to look, whatever area of your life is not giving you fulfillment or freedom or full self-expression in your life, where there's a lot of joy and energy, you're contracting, you're playing small because you're not requesting. So people can come to me and say, "Well, Darren, my relationship's not working right now because we're not doing any date nights." Okay, why aren't you doing date nights? "Darren, we've got three young kids." "Right, the house is crazy with the kids running around. Man, Darren, by 8 o'clock, man, we're exhausted. We don't have any time to go on a date night. Although my wife would love to get dressed up in her sexy dress and go on a date night, go someplace. We got three young kids running around the house. So where are you not requesting?" "What do you mean? Is there one of the neighbors that you trust that can look after the kids for a couple hours? Is there a niece or a nephew or a family member, a friend, a loved one, a neighbor, a colleague that can look after the kids for a few hours?" "Oh no, Darren, we would never do that. No, there's no, everybody's busy, Darren. Everybody's busy." I got that. But what if you made a powerful request and you went to somebody in your neighborhood and said, "Listen, it's been months, been years since I took my wife on a date. My wife would love to go on a date. She's completely exhausted looking after the kids and running the family and running the household. I'd just like to have 3 hours, take my wife someplace special, right? Or go for a picnic in the park. Would you mind looking after my kids?" And Darren, "Well, Darren," but you see, most people take themselves out of the game before the game's even begun. So I said, treat it as a game. So I want you to start making requests, right? The next time you walk into a store, say, hey, what would it take to get 10% off? I'm a freaking customer. I come here all the time. I spend a few hundred or a few thousand dollars a year. I've been a great loyal customer. I'm loyal. I'm here a couple times a week buying coffee. Could I get 10% off?
I hear you. I hear you. If you don't ask, it's always no.
And what happens is when people start making requests, you'll be amazed. It's awkward, uncomfortable at first, but it develops your confidence, your belief in yourself. Your self-worth goes up because you feel you matter, you're worthy, and you allow other people to be a contribution to your life. Because people are around you, because we teach other people how to treat us. And people are always wanting to help, but most people are scared to ask to help because most people don't want to be rejected.
So
So
true.
start being, so I always say to people in running small businesses and becoming entrepreneurs and self-employed, they're like a lot of realtors, financial planners, mortgage brokers, insurance. I said, when was the last time you asked your hairstylist for a referral? Who do you know is looking to buy, sell, or invest in real estate? Like, what do you mean my hairstylist? She's been my hairstylist for 13 years. I'd never ask her. Why not? You guys talk about the news, weather, sports, and traffic all the time. Why not talk about making her just make a powerful request? So here's the key thing when you make a request. I'll leave you this. When you make a request, people only do one of three things. Step number one is they'll accept the request. So they'll accept it. Step number two is they'll decline the request. And step number three is they'll counter offer the request. They'll either accept it, decline it, or counter offer it. And a lot of times in business, when they decline the request, it's because they're not a decision maker. But people by nature generally want to help. And you're going to read a story in the book about me with a homeless guy if you've not got to that
I
part.
did. I read it.
Was that a powerful story
The
about me with the homeless?
$100 asking for a $25. Yeah. We'll come back and talk about that one.
Sure.
All right. Yeah.
Life-changing experience of that homeless gentleman.
Great book. I encourage anyone who is in business to read it and be inspired. And thank you, Darren. I think
My pleasure.
your story is proof that one relationship, one person who sees your potential can change everything. And I think, as we heard though here today, it doesn't stop there. Darren has taken the belief others gave him and turned it into fuel for building businesses, mentoring others, and changing lives around the world. And here at Relationships Rule, we believe success isn't just about what you build, it's about who you lift along the way. And Darren, your life is a testament to that. Thank you. Thank you for
Thank you. My
being here.
pleasure. Grateful to be here.
Thanks for joining us. If today's show inspired you to make a new connection, why not start with me? Head over to LinkedIn and connect with me. Be sure to let me know you are a podcast listener, because I select one listener each month who connects with me on LinkedIn for a complimentary profile audit. And you know I love to meet new people, so I hope you take me up on it. Don't forget to stay connected and be remembered.